Well, hello everyone and welcome. This is Dr. Hedberg and welcome to the Dr. Hedberg Show. And in this episode, I'll be talking about the best supplements for the thyroid. So like any gland in the body, each gland requires, you know, just specific building blocks, specific nutrients that are required to produce hormones. So I'm going to talk today about those basic building blocks and then some additional supplements that can help not just thyroid hormone production, but the utilization of thyroid hormone in the cell and the rest of the body. So let's jump right in. And zinc is the first one I want to talk about. Zinc is probably my favorite mineral. Zinc is required for the production of T4. So let's just start with some basics again. So T4 is made by the thyroid gland, and then it's converted into T3 outside of the thyroid gland in places like the liver and the kidneys and the intestine and muscle tissue. And T3 is much, much more active than T4. It's the main active form of thyroid hormone. So you need to have good conversion of T4 into T3 to have good thyroid function. So zinc is required for the production of T4 in the gland. Also the conversion of T4 into T3 outside of the gland. And then T3, actually the T3 receptor in the cell is dependent on healthy zinc levels. So even if your T3 levels are healthy, if you're deficient in zinc, then the T3 just won't work the way that it should inside the cell if you're zinc deficient. So you can tell if you're deficient in zinc with a zinc taste test. So you can buy liquid zinc and you put about 2 tablespoons in your mouth, hold it there for about 30 seconds. And you just want to notice if you taste anything or not. If you don't taste anything at all, then you're probably zinc deficient. If you notice a dry, furry, sweet, mineral, hydrogen peroxide taste, then you probably have a moderate zinc deficiency. And then if you notice a very strong taste, it's considered a metallic taste, so like you're tasting metal in your mouth, then you probably don't need any zinc at all. So I recommend about 30 to 60 milligrams of zinc a day for about 30 days, and then do the zinc taste test again. It can take longer to replenish your zinc, sometimes up to 2 or 3 months. If you take zinc, make sure you take a good product that has 30 milligrams of zinc and about 1 milligram of copper per capsule, because zinc will deplete your body of copper and that'll create a whole nother host of health issues, particularly involving the immune system and your energy levels. So you don't want to create a copper deficiency by taking zinc. The next one is vitamin A, and vitamin A is actually the most common vitamin deficiency in the world. Not really so much, though, in places like the United States and other industrialized nations. Vitamin A is mainly just required for healthy thyroid hormone receptors. So it's involved in the gene that actually regulates thyroid-stimulating hormone as well. So you're going to get plenty of vitamin A from eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. And then you'll get some from egg yolks. And there's actually a lot of vitamin A in liver, but people aren't really eating liver these days. Also, there's a lot of vitamin A in grass-fed beef. But you'll get plenty from fruits and vegetables. So I don't recommend taking a lot of vitamin A as a supplement, no more than just what's in a multiple vitamin. And you want to stay away from synthetic forms of vitamin A, like beta carotene or synthetic carotenoids. These can actually cause health problems and have been linked to things like cancer. So if you do take it, or if it's in your multi, make sure it says natural carotenoids or mixed carotenoids. So that's a vitamin A. And then the B vitamins, especially B2, B3, B6, B12, and B9, which is folate, deficiencies in these can affect thyroid function, and those are also involved in thyroid hormone production. So stress is going to significantly deplete the body of B vitamins, and so taking a good B complex and making sure that the forms of the B vitamins are methylated, so methylcobalamin, which is methylated B12, and then methylated folate, also known as MTHF. Make sure that the B12 and the folate are methylated, otherwise those can also cause problems. And you might have the MTHFR defect, and that's a genetic test. If you have the MTHFR defect, then you will most likely have issues with folate metabolism, and that can build up in the body if you do have that and you're taking it. And that's also been linked to cancer. So the MTHFR test, you can do a blood test, or there's various genetic testing out there, like through 23andMe, and that will give you your MTHFR data as well. So that's a good thing to know if you're going to take B vitamins. Asparagine is the next one. This is an amino acid that actually makes up thyroid stimulating hormone. This is not something I recommend taking as a supplement. I just wanted you to be aware of it. And as long as you're eating enough protein and you're not protein deficient, then you don't have to worry about asparagine. If you need extra protein, then I usually recommend to patients a good whey protein. Or if you have a dairy allergy or intolerance, then a good pea protein or a hemp protein is going to be fine. And you want to stay away from rice protein. Those have all been taken off the market because of lead or arsenic. And if it is out there, I mean, all the good companies have removed all their rice protein. So if you see it out there, stay away from rice protein. The next amino acid actually is leucine. And leucine is a branch chain amino acid, along with isoleucine and valine. Leucine is actually required for thyroid hormone production. It's actually required to make thyroglobulin, and thyroglobulin is the main protein building block for thyroid hormone production in the gland. And leucine is highly anabolic, and that means that it builds things up, so it builds muscle and it repairs your body from physical exercise, physical activity. Leucine also improves your metabolism, your metabolic rate, along with thyroid hormone. And leucine is really important for healthy blood sugar. So if you're insulin resistant, leucine can be very, very helpful. And I recommend one scoop of leucine powder added to all of your protein shakes. That'll give your protein powder an anabolic boost. It'll also give your metabolism a boost and also support your thyroid. Another amino acid is tyrosine, and I'm just mentioning it because tyrosine is actually required for the production of T4 and T3 in the gland. However, if you take tyrosine, it can increase adrenaline levels, and adrenaline actually inhibits thyroid function. So I don't recommend supplementing with it unless you're truly deficient, which is going to be very rare, and that would require blood testing for amino acids. That would really be the only way to know. But again, it is very rare. And if you are going to supplement with it, I recommend the N-acetyl tyrosine form of it. But again, I would stay away from it unless you're absolutely certain that you're deficient in tyrosine. And like the other amino acids, like asparagine and leucine, if you're eating plenty of protein like you should, if you're supplementing with protein powder, if you need it, then you should be getting plenty of protein. Okay, now I just want to talk about a couple of herbs. So Google is the next one, and Google comes from the myrrh plant, and myrrh gum resin is actually used for certain infections, but Google is a compound found in that plant, and Google's actually been shown to improve T4 and T3 levels, so it does boost the thyroid that way. And it also works as an anti-inflammatory and an antioxidant, which might be helpful for certain people. And then the other herb is ashwagandha. Ashwagandha, also known as Indian ginseng, this is an adrenal adaptogen, meaning that it helps your body adapt to stress and balances the adrenal glands, the cortisol levels. And ashwagandha, this has been shown to improve T4 levels and the conversion of T4 into T3. So it does support thyroid and metabolism. The other thing is, since it's an adrenal adaptogen, it'll keep your cortisol levels in check. And too much cortisol will inhibit thyroid function. Too much cortisol will inhibit the conversion of T4 into T3. It will negatively affect T3 receptors. And then cortisol actually increases reverse T3 levels. And reverse T3 binds to T3 receptors and it blocks them, so T3 can't bind. And ashwagandha will help keep those reverse T3 levels in check. So ashwagandha, in addition to helping the thyroid, it does improve mood. You should notice more energy, more stamina. And then a lot of people take it before bed because it really helps with insomnia and sleep problems if your sleep problems are stress-related. So ashwagandha is a great one. I take adrenal adaptogens every morning. I take ashwagandha, rhodiola, Panax ginseng, and Eleuthero, and that's in a mixed formula. Okay, iron is another one I want to mention. Iron is required for thyroid hormone production. It's required for the conversion of T4 into T3. And it's also required for optimal utilization of T3 inside the cell. Now, a lot of women are deficient in iron because they lose blood every month during menstruation. And so if the amount of iron a woman is consuming in her diet is not sufficient to make up for the amount that she loses every month, then you may see a iron deficiency. And you may be deficient in iron but not have true anemia on your blood tests. And the way that we know that is with the ferritin test. And the ferritin test, it's spelled F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, and I wrote it's one of the most popular articles on my website, actually, at drhedberg.com, is about the ferritin test and how important it is for overall health and thyroid function. And so the ferritin is how much iron is actually stored in your body. And if those stores become low, then you will start to develop hypothyroid symptoms because you just won't be able to make enough thyroid hormone or activate it or use it in the cell. So the ferritin test, it's rarely ordered in conventional medicine. It's usually just ordered to look for a disease called hemochromatosis, which is a genetic disease where people accumulate too much iron. But it's rarely looked at as being too low in many people. And the lab ranges are just way too broad. So you need a ferritin of at least 80 in order to have healthy thyroid function. And the lab cutoff currently is around 15. So there's this huge gap of women that have ferritin levels between 15 and 80 who are suffering. And once ferritin gets below 50, usually women start to notice hair loss. So thinning of the hair and hair loss, fatigue, cold hands and feet, memory loss, impaired brain function, just a lot of issues once ferritin levels get low. So you want to get that ferritin test done for sure if you have a thyroid problem. Okay, iodine we have to mention. Iodine is, of course, required for thyroid hormone production, but it's not recommended in people who have Hashimoto's disease or Graves' disease because it can make those conditions worse. It's been shown to really shoot up antibody levels and increase inflammation in the gland if you have autoimmunity. Usually just eating foods rich in iodine, like seaweed and seafood, gives you enough iodine. Iodized salt does contain iodine, but that's sodium chloride, which is not the best form of salt to consume, so that creates some other issues. But a good multivitamin will have around 150 micrograms of iodine, which is usually enough for most people. Now, if you're deficient, you may require higher doses, upwards of 1 milligram all the way up to 6 milligrams a day for about 2 or 3 months to really get your levels back up. But you need to be carefully evaluated before you would take milligram doses of iodine for a couple of reasons. Iodine is very dangerous if you have what's called a hot nodule, and you might not even know you have one. But a hot nodule on the thyroid gland will become more inflamed if you take iodine. So it'll actually pump out more thyroid hormone that can create a thyroid storm. And a thyroid storm will lead to an emergency room visit. And some people even die from thyroid storms. So you don't want to take iodine if you have a hot nodule. And you wouldn't know that unless you had a thyroid ultrasound. So you definitely don't want to supplement with milligram doses of iodine without consulting your doctor first. Also, it's been shown that when iodine is added to the food supply in places like Denmark and Turkey and China, the incidence of autoimmune thyroid disease significantly increases. So iodine is one of our best known environmental triggers of Hashimoto's and Graves' disease. So you do want to be very careful with it. Again, don't use milligram doses without talking to your doctor first. Selenium is a very important nutrient for the thyroid. It's important for the production of thyroid hormone and the conversion of T4 into T3. So if you're deficient in selenium, you may have low T3 levels. And selenium is also very helpful. It's been shown to improve the symptoms of Hashimoto's disease and Graves' disease. And it will also lower antibody levels. It's been shown to lower the antibody levels of Hashimoto's disease, like thyroid peroxidase and antithyroglobulin. So it's very helpful in that regard. So I don't really want to talk about any specific supplements for Graves' disease because that's a very dangerous condition to be treating on your own. If you have Graves, you should be working with an endocrinologist. And then if you're working with a functional medicine practitioner, you also want to be working with an endocrinologist at the same time. So I'm not going to get into detail with that. But with Hashimoto's, most of these supplements I talked about are going to be helpful, with the exception of the iodine. And some of these will help, but really only if you need them. And with Hashimoto's, remember, it's always about figuring out what causes it. And there are going to be some variations in the supplements that I've talked about today based on what's causing the Hashimoto's. I can just name a few. Cordyceps, that's a mushroom that's actually been shown to lower antibody levels in Hashimoto's. Curcumin can be very helpful. Quercetin, N-acetylcysteine, vitamin C. Those are just some, and then vitamin D would also be one, but those are just some general guidelines that help to balance the immune system in general when there's autoimmunity. And then if we find that there's an infection involved with the Hashimoto's, then we're going to be using some specific herbal medicines and supplements to target those infections, but that's going to be patient specific. So I just today I just wanted to talk about some general supplements that will help most people with hypothyroidism, most people with Hashimoto's. But again, make sure you're getting it evaluated by your doctor. So if you go to drhedberg.com/podcasts, you'll see all my podcasts there, and you can click on this particular show so you can see the show notes. I have some links on there to some of the things that I've talked about today. And the best way to support this podcast is to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or TuneIn, or wherever you listen. Also, leaving a review is very helpful. And you can share these episodes with your friends on social media or by email, and that really helps to spread the word. All right, so hope that was helpful. This is Dr. Hedberg. Thanks for tuning in, and I will talk to you at the next show. Take care.